Hello, this is Kinch Rindell with Your Business Podcast. This is the first book review. It's going to be of James Altucher's book, The Choose Yourself Guide to Wealth. Let's see, this is late 2015, November. I'm just south of Denver, Colorado, and it is snowing. Blizzard watch is out. Not too long ago, after listening to James Altucher a lot, I've realized I should be reading books again. So my goal by 2016, each week in 2016, I want to be reading a book a week. I'm probably almost doing that now, and sometimes I'm reading more than one when they're small books. And as a side benefit, hopefully, for myself and for anyone listening, will be to actually review these books. That way I've taken notes, and I will actually remember what things I want to take out of the books, and just things to share in case you would like to buy the book as well. Some of these books I read in paper copy, and some, especially James's books, sometimes they're 99 cents on the Kindle app that you can use on your iPhone or anything else. You don't have to have a Kindle for that. So some of these books are 99 cents. 99. It's a no-brainer. You learn one thing out of something for a dollar. You're kidding me. That's the best deal ever. So once again, this is the book review for The Choose Yourself Guide to Wealth. Ideas are the new currency of the 21st century, he says. I'm thinking, I hope so, because I have lots of ideas. If you have ideas, or if you don't yet, you can build that idea muscle, as he would call it. What would you do with them? One thing I'm pursuing is not only patenting ideas, which I've done, now I mainly want to learn how to license those ideas. I have a whole nother podcast already uploaded that talks about ideas and how to generate them. Let's keep going. How did he go broke and how did he end up in prison, he says. And what he talks about there is literally him being taught to go to school, he considered kind of like prison, having to sit somewhere all the time. How he went broke was following kind of like the normal things everybody does. He's against 401ks and such, as we'll talk about a little bit later. So ideas, he keeps saying ideas are the currency of the 21st century. He himself does very well with that concept. He gives ideas out for free. He comes with the ideas, comes up with them all the time. He lists 18 new rules of abundance, a daily practice. Some of these little highlights from there are ideas every day. Build that muscle once again. And if for him, he literally likes to list 10 to 20 ideas a day on a topic. And he challenges himself to do that, to make his brain work to do it. A little concept after that, that is idea sex. Combine those ideas. That's where people really succeed and excel, is when you combine two ideas. I personally did that with a patent I have, taking something from working at a golf course and something from autocross car racing, and combine them. Next, rules. Real rules of leadership: give more to others than you expect back from yourself or back for yourself. So key, right? That's pretty easy. If I give you more value than you pay for in business or in friendship or in relationship, anything, that's going to be a winner every time. So kind of think about that if you're wondering, how should I do better in my relationship? How could I do better in business? Give more to others than you expect back for yourself. Literally, whatever you're doing, is it a product, is it a service, can you really make it seem to the person getting it, make them feel and realize, wow, this is a great value. He always pushes, James that is, not only just to come up with 10 ideas a day, so we could all sit down and do that. He then reminds you, hey, everybody gets caught up on ideas. Remember, try to every day be a little bit better physically, mentally, and spiritually. His little motto he talks about on his podcast and everywhere else is 1% better. Obviously, after 100 days, you'd be 100% better. So it doesn't really work out that way, he'll say, but still do it. Another thing, everybody that is successful seems to be A-okay with failure. They look at it as an experiment, he points out. Whereas so many people, or so many of us, literally go, oh, I don't want to fail, so I'm not going to try that. I literally wonder, does that hold me back on some things? Is it a fear of failure? Is it a fear of success? He has a neat little trick he talks about when he goes somewhere to meet people to be different. He always tips with $2 bills. I swear I need to go to the bank and get some. I kept thinking I'd do that 6 months ago. I never have. He also points out the concept in this part. Saving a dollar is not making a dollar. So if you, let's say, make $100, you've made $100. You can only save $100 if you could save it all. So he points out quite often, you should try to earn more money. Earn more money. How do you do that? Invest in yourself. Learn more. Learn more that other people would pay you for. Start companies. Give out ideas. Give value once again. Next chapter or section he is how I ended up in prison and how I broke out. Once again, mentioned a little bit earlier, but he talks about school, his mortgage on the two homes he lost, 401k plan, how bad that kind of is in his mind. And I kind of summarize this, and I tell my friends this now, literally in the past week. If you invest in a 401k plan, you had that money for a nanosecond, and then it's locked up for how many years? Probably till you're 59 and a half before you can get it back. And all these different things out there that help you, the middle class, or people invest, they make money every step of the way. Mutual funds charge you. ETFs charge you less, but they still charge you. You want to trade stocks, they charge you. I come back personally, invest in myself, invest in my ideas. I've invested with other people and lost a good $30,000. And then realized after the fact, wow, a patent could have been a lot less than that. I could have patented a lot of things, a lot for $30,000. So I definitely live the invest in yourself, invest in my farm, invest in my skills, invest in mentors. Take the time to do that stuff. I'd much rather pay thousands of dollars and learn something than pay $30,000 and learn that I should not put my money with other people's ideas. He then goes and talks about the facts. And what he means by that is people think, oh, a home's a great investment. It's an asset. Well, if you look at the last 100 years, the average return in housing, he said, is 0.2%. And in his case, he bought two homes and lost money on both of them, ruined his credit, etc. He also talks about some of the facts of college tuition, how it's outpaced inflation by far for years and years and years. And he's literally trying to convince his daughters not to go to college. I literally have gone back now probably a year or two and thought, from what I've learned, college is so different now, and the people that really get ahead seem like they don't always go to college. So I've mentioned to my wife, who probably thought, I should shoot him. He is crazy. He might really have lost it, that I don't care if my kids go to college. I actually hope they have their own ideas by then, their own little businesses, something that they're like, why would I go sit there and do that? I admit college was fun. I played a ton of basketball. I should go play after this. It was fun, but really, is it the same now? Does a college degree get you much? Not the wrong one, that's for sure. Moves on to the history of the end of the world. He talks about, since he's been on media, he's been on CNBC, he's on lots of these different shows, the current events, how the current events are just media hype most of the time. And I always think personally, what effect does that have on me? People get all excited about who's president. Yes, they can change things, but day to day, they're not going to hold me back as much as my actions or lack of actions are going to hold me back. My watching TV or wasting time doing something else, that's going to hold me back more than all the media hype, worrying about Ebola or anything else. So I canceled cable almost 3 years ago now. And I try not to pay too much attention to the news. Eventually, when it's important, somebody will tell you what's going on. He talks about how America kind of became a consumer, as in that we buy so much stuff, we the people. Because during the wars, I think it goes back to World War II or I, that literally once everybody else was bombed and our men went off to war, the ladies got jobs. They replaced the men that left. So there was income coming in for them, and then the men came back and got jobs. Then you had dual incomes. You could buy more. You could have more than one car. You could have the house. You could have the more expensive house. Then you could get mortgages. You could get credit cards. He talks about kind of that, how we got here, which was fascinating to me. Next, he goes into why all the personal finance gurus are out of date. Personal finance, he says, didn't exist before 1970. This hits back on what I just mentioned, that every step of the way when you go to invest, people are making money along the way. I happened to talk to a financial advisor in the past month, maybe 2 months. I knew him, or know him still. I asked him, hey, how's it going? He goes, I'm up 10 to 12% this year. It's like, wow, the market's kind of been up and down and up and down. He goes, no, on me, as in I'm getting more clients. Meaning he's doing well because when you're a client of a financial advisor, most of them charge you like 1% a year of whatever you have with them, regardless if it goes up or down. So literally every step of the way. He mentioned some things about cognitive bias, protect us from the wild and keep us on the safe path. So literally, if we pay attention to all the negative things on TV, that's really because 10,000 years ago, we paid attention to something negative such as a lion or different sounds of things that literally could hurt us. So our bias is to focus on the negative. And I know myself, it's so addictive to be paying attention to negative stuff. I remember during the Iraq, first time we invaded over there, we went on vacation and there was no TVs. I couldn't watch all the lights of them shooting tracers up. A couple years ago, before I kind of switched my media habits, where I now learn instead of watching only things that are negative and reading only negative, I would sit there for an hour or two a day and read about economics. What possible good could come out of that? None. So I literally switched. My little tip is, if you're doing something you don't want to do, okay, maybe you can't just put down the iPhone and not watch YouTube, but you can click on YouTube and watch videos about something you're interested in that you'd like to learn about that could get you ahead. For me, it was permaculture. I geeked out on all kinds of permaculture videos, raising cattle, greenhouses, you name it. I really dove into that. And still to this day, if I get a little bit like, oh, what should I do? I want to go back to Zero Hedge and I really shouldn't. I will go to a forum about permaculture and read some things and get some new ideas and go, oh, that really does encourage me. I mean, watching about cows and how good cows are for the land and the soil and the worms and all the critters, I ended up buying them because I watched probably 20 to 40 hours about it, about mob grazing. So literally, cognitive bias, you're going to have to force yourself not to pay attention to the negative. For me, it's cut as much of that out as possible. He once again focuses, comes back and touches on abundance for all parts of life, not only your money. As in, think about it. Some people have lots of money, but their marriage or their relationships might not be that great. So you really have to focus some time on all that. Next, he gets into develop a practice for success. Simple life goals, he talks about. Happiness. He eradicates unhappiness. He wants smooth days and no hassles. So Lily, how could you cut all that stuff out, the hassles? For me, after listening to several other people, I'm in the process of getting a virtual assistant to kind of cut out some of the stuff I don't want to do so I can focus on the things where I really give value. Can I do more podcasts and have them help me push them out? Yes. Can I help them or have them help me do research? Yes. So think about that. Simple life goals. Next, physical, sleep, and eat. He is a big proponent. I paid attention more because of him. Of sleeping at least 8 hours a day. And literally, I talked to a lady at Toastmasters this past week who said, oh, you're doing so good with memory or something I brought up, or reading so many books. She goes, I just don't remember that much. I go, how much do you sleep? She goes, I'm an insomniac. Sleeps like 4 or 5 hours a day. I go, I would suggest 8. It's like, did I stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night? No. I listened to James Altucher's podcast. Yes, I did. All of them probably. So literally, I second this notion. Sleep, sleep, sleep. Get good sleep if possible. Next, he touches on emotional love and support from people. You literally want to surround you and your people with happy people. People are going to support you. And this makes me think of a coach or friends that are going to help push you along the way. A mentor. Mentors, more and more of them. I am branching out big time to have more and more mentors. I've realized through Toastmasters, I know people that are retiring and they have time on their hands. They will go and sit down and talk to you for an hour or two. That is crazy cool. They know so much more about things in their arena of life than I do. I've enjoyed quite a few talks lately because of that. He talks on spiritual as well. I love the little quote, complaining is draining. Mental, mentions ideas, work the idea muscle, literally come up with ideas. Emotional, we just covered that one. Next, he goes into results of the daily practice. He says doing his daily practice of having ideas and becoming 1% better in the different areas has helped him change his life every 6 months. It's all different. He comes with ideas. He's always trying to be better mentally, physically, spiritually, every day, just a little bit better. Just try to improve it a little bit. And because of that, he also mentions how he would make a lot of money and lose it and make money and lose it. And then he finally realized every time I quit doing these small things of trying to improve, trying to have ideas each day, that's what kind of brought him back down. He'd fall back and crash down. So now he's committed. We'll see. We'll hold him to it. To keep every day, taking those actions. It really, I've said this since my podcast, it's all about taking actions. Choosing to take action. It's always now, what action will you do after this? I don't know, but you should be thinking, what's on my list? What am I going to break down and do? He thinks you have more luck also. By sharing ideas, I do believe if I share good ideas with you, you're more likely to share them back with me. Opportunities. I might share some ideas and opportunities with you. You might share some with me. People on the outside are going to say, hey, Kinch is just lucky. But like, no, I probably took some actions that got me that info back or got me that connection. This is now part one, new game, new rules in his book. Get paid, get laid, lose weight. What do those have in common? If you have a product that offers something like that, people will pay for it. They will learn how to get paid, get laid, and lose weight. I can't really help with the lose weight. Probably not. Well, if you're nice, you might get laid. And to get paid, you got to take those actions. I mean, there's so much more in this book. I'm literally hitting a few highlights here as we go and go. He lists 10 ideas for newsletters that you can write. And he has a whole book on ideas. But literally, if you had a newsletter like he does that people might pay for, write down 10 things you know. I stopped and actually did that. I was like, man, if I had an e-product, what do I know more than other people? And I'm probably going to touch on this later. If there's some topic that you've already read books on, you know more than most people. That means other people that find that topic or may want to find your blog or find your insight or find your podcast about that. He mentioned something about text ads to try out products. What that makes me think of is it's so easy to have an idea today and go, man, I want to sell a super duper mousetrap. I wonder if anyone would buy that. Well, 30 years ago, you'd probably produce it and or run some TV commercials before you'd find out if anybody wants it. Today, you've got eBay and Craigslist. Before you even produce it, you can offer to sell it and just tell people I'm sold out. Sorry, I don't have it anymore. When you see those commercials for things like, oh, buy two today and we'll send you two for the price of one. You pay shipping and handling plus a small amount of $19.99, three payments. A lot of times those products do not yet exist. They know how to make them, but they're running these ads to see how many people will buy them to see if they should make them. That's what he's talking about here. Text ads. You so easily can try an idea out. Do you want to maybe consult? Go on Craigslist or somewhere else and put up that you'll do taxes for $20 or whatever it is that you can do. You will walk dogs. You will help people raise chickens, do bees, you name it. You can try it these days. Next, what if you don't know what your passion is? Well, outside of his book, I can tell you Shailene Johnson. Shailene Johnson has a smart success program. I like it. So far, about not quite half through. So he mentions once again, you don't know what your passion is. He goes, passion. You're naturally going to get passionate about what you're good at. So think about that. What are you good at? Is that your passion? Or are those your passions? For me, I look at my hobbies and things that were my hobbies. He mentions, what did you do back in from the age of 8 to 16? What did you like to do? I'm not so sure what I liked to do back then, how that would apply to my passions now. I guess play. Who doesn't like to play things? Well, I do. Hopefully I'll be doing more of that soon. A little bit of hockey again. Passion. Passion, passion, passion. What are you good at? That's something you write down 10 ideas for. What are you passionate about? What would you like to help? What would you like to do? And then he goes, why you have to quit your job this year. Realizing he also wrote, a little side note here, he wrote a book called The Rich Employee. I've not read it yet, but I probably will. I never plan to be an employee again, but I know some people that are great employees that should learn how to tie their success to the work they do as an employee. So once again, why you have to quit your job this year. He points out how the middle class is dead. Outsourcing is growing hugely. I really do think that a lot of the middle class jobs are just not going to be there. It's so easy to outsource so many things these days. Between robots, computer screens to order your food, and virtual assistants overseas or anywhere else, or just people that will take less money. And then he goes on to only free time, imagination, creativity, and an ability to disappear will help you deliver value that nobody ever delivered before in the history of humankind. So you have to spend some time, you have to have some free time to dedicate toward ideas of what you might do, what you're passionate about, what you'd come up with to do for your own business, I would say. He notes being an entrepreneur can be anyone. He says, anyone with the ability to fail. to have ideas, sell those ideas, and courage to execute on ideas. He goes on to say, to be persistent, so even as you fail, you learn and move on to the next adventure. So he hits on this failure again. You got to look at failure, just call it an experiment. Oh, that didn't work. Why didn't it work? Okay, what would I try next time? So I keep telling myself, okay, if some of my ideas that I'm trying to license or patent don't work out, it's okay. It's an experiment. Learn from it. And next time, do the homework ahead of time. And for me, when I say do the homework, do more research. Maybe put that text ad up there and offer that service. He then mentions, who can I help today? And that's a question that I believe he says, if not, I for sure think about, when you wake up in the morning, who can I help today? For my kids at night, it's good to say, hey, who did you help today? Oh, you helped me do this or you helped me do that. To bring it up, that's a focus. Once again, in business, if you're helping people, if you can solve problems, you can get business. You can be a consultant. People will want you. People will want to associate with you, will want to pay you to help them. So who can you help today? Ask yourself that in the morning if you can. Write in a little list of questions for yourself. His next section is be an idea machine. And once again, I have a whole podcast on ideas, but we'll quickly go over some of this. Work out your brain. Challenge yourself. Ideas are the currency of life. He goes on to say, not money, because money can run out. Money gets depleted until you go broke. But good ideas buy you experiences, buy you better ideas, buy you better experiences, more time, and they can save your life. Financial wealth is a side effect of the runner's high of your idea muscle. So once again, he's just all about, no matter what happens, if you go broke, but you have good ideas again, as he did, you can rise back up. And he points out, which is so key, if you're just listing ideas, they're not all good. So be okay with bad ideas. Expect them. It's okay. If you're doing the experiment of 10 to 20 ideas a day, realize that most of them aren't going to be good. If you had 10 good ideas a day, multiply that times every day in the year. I'm not sure what to call you, a brainiac genius. Hopefully you're giving those ideas out and seeing them grow and become something. Literally, it's okay. Most ideas are not going to succeed. Usually just write them down. And if it sticks in your mind as something you ought to pursue, you go back and research it some more. He then goes into, how do you give these ideas away? His examples are, he's given ideas about the Kindle app to Amazon. He's given ideas to Google. They have then flown him out there. He's given ideas to companies where they're like, hey, these are good ideas. We want to put you on the board of our company and give you stock certificates because of that. So literally sharing ideas. I personally did that when I called Nokia or emailed them first and then talked to them on the phone. And that was probably 15, 20 years ago. I am going to make a point to do more and more of that. I have emailed different websites saying, hey, these links don't work. Little simple things. See something that could be fixed. Give somebody an idea of how to fix it if possible, or at least let them know. But give your ideas out and see how that helps you network. Next, how to sell anything. Some of his highlights from this are be a friend. That always helps. I would rather buy something from my friend than somebody else. He talks about say no. And I must tell you, he has a whole book about no. You need to say no to so many things. Saying no will open up your opportunities to other things. So if you're always saying yes, you might be occupying all your money to something by saying, yes, I'll invest in that. Yes, I'll invest in that. Or yes, I'll help you do that. Yes, I'll help you do that. Yes, I'll go in business with you. There's an opportunity cost. So think about what you're saying yes to. And some of those are become no's. Always over-deliver. That's another way to help you sell things or sell anything. Over-deliver. He hits on that again. Never take no for an answer. He has some very interesting things for never take no for an answer. As in, you can keep following up, keep giving ideas to people. And one little note, maybe I have it in here in the notes somewhere, is what would it take for you to say yes? So if you're offering somebody a deal, what would it take for you to agree? Guys, think about that. If you ask somebody, well, what would it take to get a yes? Refer customers to a better source. I personally do that, or I will tell people a better way to do something for web hosting, let's say. An example, a couple weeks back, a lady called. She thought she needed a server, didn't really know much. I said, for what you're doing, you could just get a free application to have somebody log into your office server instead of paying us. She may never refer somebody to us, but at least she knows I wasn't trying to just get her money out of her for a solution, when in reality, hopefully she had a cheaper solution that would also do what she needed. If she needs to have more people log in, maybe she calls us back. Sell everything. That could also make you think of always be selling. Makes me think of Mark Cuban. I believe it was with him. He'd go out there and somebody'd say, hey, can you program me this application? I'll do this. Oh, yes, sure. Yet he had no clue how to program. Always be selling, as in always also say yes. Next, how to convince anyone of anything in 60 seconds. That'd be good. Check the book out, because he's got so many little tips like this. Next, once the ideas get rolling, and then he goes into 10 things you need to know about lending. Oh, about leading, sorry. He's not lending any money, I don't think. He's about leading. So being a leader happens right now today. It's something you can do without money, without authority, and without anybody. But first, you have to lead yourself. So he points out that literally, you better be able to lead yourself and work on that. It's always easier to work on yourself. Some of those are tips. Desire more success for others than for yourself. He always points out, if you're an employee, give all the credit to your boss that you can. Next on his list is yes and. So somebody comes up with an idea, say yes and I would change it like this, or yes and I would do this also. Yes and. That's a great little, two words that are so powerful. If you're having a discussion with your partner, instead of saying no, that's idiotic. Yes, and by the way, let's think about this case. Yes, and. He touches on gratitude. I think that's so important in life. Be grateful for your employees. Be grateful for the opportunities you have. He goes on to say, a leader connects to all people and tells a visionary story. Your company, say, we help companies with their hosting needs because. So we help do something and then because. As a leader, you need to be okay with change. And then he notes, a good solution solves one problem. A real solution solves 100 problems. What comes to my mind is, if you want to be a billionaire, help a billion people. So if you have a problem that's out there for lots of people, what do you do to help them? The more people you help, it's like the golden rule, the more you will be helped. A sick leader is not a good leader. So when I read that, I instantly thought of a CEO we had at a company that would literally drink Red Bulls and stay up all night long until he just collapsed. Be healthy. Be yourself healthy. You're also an example. Love what you do. He touches on, don't do something just for the money. Money's a side effect of persistence. You're persistent in things you're interested in. Explore your interests, then persist, then enjoy all the side effects. This comes back to finding your passion. How many times do you see somebody doing something you're passionate about that's making money? Start noticing that. You might be into photography. There are people making money doing photography. You probably could do it as well. Start as a side business and let it grow, nurture it. Persistence, he talks about. Keep being persistent. Do something every day. Can you do one thing every day? One bit of research? One blog post? Something that you're passionate about. How often do some of us spend time on Facebook posting on other people's, or posting on other people's forums? What if you had your own blog and you post on other forums and link back to it? Offered your services or something there. His last point in this section that I had noted anyway was, every successful tomorrow is determined by one thing, having a successful today. Everything is now. Right now you're listening to a podcast. Right now you could be doing something else, your opportunity cost. Right now people are driving down the freeway, either networking on the phone, or listening to a radio, or listening to a self-help book, or learning about something. Have a successful today by making the choices to do and learn something today to have a better tomorrow. His next section, sharing ideas. Being a great public speaker. Being a great public speaker, he says, he has a whole post. So Google tips to be a great public speaker. Something I took that he mentions here is comedians. Remember to pause and storytelling. Pausing, oh my goodness, I am so much better than I was, 7 years ago when I joined Toastmasters? But the comedian tip. He literally, before he goes on stage, he will listen to comedians to get their presence, to see how they pause, see how they wait for somebody's laughing, to kind of just get him in the mood set. I literally did that myself before a Toastmasters talk, and I think I did even better than I usually would because of that. So that's a weird little tip that I would have never thought of that he talks about. And he talks about on his podcast as well. Storytelling, so important. This last week at Toastmasters, there's a lady that she focuses on storytelling. And literally, she said that when I tell a story, or you tell a story, when people can picture that, their brain starts to light up just like your brain is lighting up. And guess what? We remember stories much better. If I told you a story about the big blizzard outside here, you can then relate that to some blizzard you saw on TV or something else. So as I look out, anything with snow now has about half an inch of snow on it since I started talking. The little tarp I have in the car there is almost all white. So how can you relate things? Tell a story. The best speech last week at Toastmasters? The guy told a story about how he and his wife, who don't have kids, bought a pinata and assumed there was candy in it. Let me tell you, I can tell you the story right now because he jumped up and down and he moved around and he said, hey, the kids hit this pinata and it moved really easily. And they whacked it and they kept hitting it and we let them each have three turns and didn't break. And then one hit it, it looked like it broke, they all ran, but nothing fell out. So they kept hitting it and it falls down to the ground and he makes a facial expression. All the kids just look at him. All the parents are staring at him like, oh my goodness. You have a pinata with no candy. How cruel is that? Tell stories. Believe it or not, we all have stories that we've heard, we've seen, we've done. And that's what people remember. How can you intertwine what you're saying into a story? What you're selling into a story? So he touches on that in different ways there, but it's so important to remember that. Little side note from me. I am big into asking questions when I speak. But I forget to pause. I know the answers, or at least my thoughts on those questions. But if you ask questions, the audience doesn't really know that. So take the time to pause. His next section is discussing ideas, how to negotiate with anyone. His first tip is say no and meet in the middle. So sometimes you have to just say, nope, but I can do this. Have more things to negotiate on your list. So if you and I want to combine companies or we're selling something, if I have more options to negotiate, like I have a list of 100 things and you have two, you might offer me less money and I might ask for these other 10 things I want. So have more things on your list. I love that one. If you can't walk away from a negotiation, then you're not negotiating. Makes me remember, he points out that one of the businesses he invested in, if a company's going broke like this one was, you don't have much to negotiate when you know you're out of business shortly after. So make sure if you think you're negotiating, it's something you're okay walking away from, saying no once again. Listen to your gut. Talks about how many sensors or what have you are in your gut, just like in your brain. So think about, how do you feel about this decision, this negotiation in your gut? He explains that a lot better than I just did. He points out options equal freedom. I so believe in that one. The more options you have, the better. Some people, I remember talking to a friend who's looking for a job. He had two options. I said, that is great. You might think it's nerve-wracking, but options are great. You get to make a choice. Options equal freedom. His next little section is using ideas to connect people, building a permission network. His point here is, if I want to network with people and connect people, make sure I ask both people if it's okay by giving a small, hey, this is John over here, and John's into patents. Joe, you're into licensing. I think you two should meet. You want to? Okay, then make the introduction. So literally, make sure that both people agree. People are busy. And just saying, hey, Joe and John, y'all should talk. No, talk to each first. Next, he talks about developing habits for abundance. Have a talent, being good at something. So you probably have some talents. If not, once again, if you will read and learn, spend a few hours, a few weeks, a few months, you will have a talent. You will know more than most people. So what are you interested in? Focus on that. Read about that. Learn about that. Finding what you're talented at, he talks about next. And this is where he talks about listing things from the age of, let's say, 6 to 18, what did you do? Me? Well, I worked for my parents. They were raising horses as a side business. I had never thought about this, how that might have affected my life. But I became a little entrepreneur probably because they enabled me to make money when I was quite young to start saving up for things. I also played a lot of basketball and golf. How does that relate? Well, I do have a patent tied to golf. Basketball kept me in shape, I guess I'd say. Still like it, still think about it a lot, just don't play as much anymore. So what else do you do from the ages of 6 to 18? Maybe that'll help you find something that will lead you to some abundance. For me, I think that's important that I learned how to work and make money, getting paid to do all these, not just chores, but taking care of horses. That probably rubbed off on me to this day. He then says, we are ultimately a combination of all of our experiences, all of the things we are interested in, all of the things we flirt with. He then says, 4 hours a day. He talks about the subject of most people throughout history probably only worked 4 hours a day, whereas most of us have to sit in a cube for 8 hours a day. Literally 4 hours, you can get a lot done in. Today I feel so productive. A great Monday. I literally thought by noon, hey, I'm not going to do anything else. But I've been meaning to get this podcast out, and I finally got my boom to hold my mic right here in front of me, so I had to get this done. It's always taking that step of get the first one done of whatever you're doing. He touches on you're most productive generally 2 to 5 hours after you wake up. Shailene Johnson would say find your power hour, and usually it's early. He'll then, at some point he's touched on, let's say during the day you're kind of tired, take a nap if you can, and you power back up. That charges you back up. He touches on history and study your failures. If you have failure, don't just say, I suck, I'm never going to do that again. Go back and look at it. What worked? What didn't work? Okay, how would I change it for this next time? The next time I experiment. Next section is how to master anything. And I'm going to read his quote here. Having persistence. Persistence creates luck. Persistence gets you experience. Persistence is a sentence of failures punctuated by the briefest of success. And eventually those successes will start to propel you toward mastery. Not one success or two, but many, many, many. So he hits back on persistence. The people that are successful, they were persistent. Michael Jordan continued to practice basketball, weight train, learn the mental side. Persistence. This ties back into if you're passionate about something, it's much easier to be persistent. If you're passionate about something, you can read more and more and spend more and more time doing it. So think about, what are you passionate about? What would you spend time learning and researching? At some point he says, if you'd read 400 books on a topic, that's a passion. For a lot of us, we'd read one book or 5 books on a topic. That's a passion. That's something that's so earth-shattering different. Another section is getting rid of your excuses. He talks about people always say, no money, no equipment, no time. Not good enough. I've got no degree. I'm not in the right location. No network. I can tell you that we all have excuses, and we could all use them anytime we want. From 7 p.m. to 2 a.m., most of us are free. That's what Gary Vaynerchuk points out. That's when he busted his butt. 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. We can all find the time. For some of us, it's easy. Some of us, we can cut out TV or switch from that to doing something. What actions will you take? What will you change? Got no network? Check out Lewis Howes, Lewis Howes. He always considered himself the guy in the middle. Moving on to why to-do lists don't work. He talks about the stress of a to-do list. He likes to say, hey, it's the end of the day. Let's write down what all I did today. Now, I still have a to-do list some days, and those are my most productive. I'm about to get a big whiteboard up here, 4 foot by 8 foot, to list out all these different things that literally slip my mind. Because I have so many different things I'm like touching on, for good or for bad, trying to get done, that I forget, oh yeah, I want to take action on that one. Oh, what's my next step over there? I got to research that. So I like the idea. If you really don't like to-do list, if they do stress you out, at the end of the day, write down everything you did do. That does feel good when I look back and go, oh, I did this, I did that. So I've done that a few times. He calls those done lists. And he then mentions about goals versus themes. He's about a theme. Like, I want to have a healthier life. That's an interesting section there. We're now into part two of the book, Making Money in the 21st Century. He talks about the trends, the power to see things differently than everyone else. He talks about all things end, but innovation takes place nonstop. He covers the trends he's been following and sees, such as biotech, healthcare. He mentioned observation. I'm confused. I don't remember what observation was. The temp workforce, robotics, chemistry, and financial technology. For the temp workforce, I remember him saying that he's on the board of a company, and the temp workforce outsourcing companies are growing like crazy, which means most likely the middle class is losing jobs to them because companies have realized they can pay less and get somebody part-time and not pay for health insurance. In chemistry, something you brought up I'd never thought about, why do you want a new cell phone? At this point, are they much different? Well, if I said, here's a cell phone whose battery lasts for a week or two, that I'd be excited about that myself. That's chemistry. He goes, that's a chemistry problem. So he'd rather invest in a chemistry type company than just the next iPhone, let's say. So he covers all those topics, much more on that. He has a whole section on lessons he learned from building a business. He has the example. He created a website. It was like his 10th one. So there were 9 failed. But this was a financial website. And he said he realized after the fact there was competition. He thought there wasn't. That's actually a good sign. That means other people are actually becoming popular and that kind of business can work. If you're the first one to the party, there may be no party for you to have. So literally, he gave away, when he went to negotiate, he said, like, I'll give you the street.com 5% of this company if you will show my ads and link to me. They said 50%. He said, okay, done. And he goes into explaining how, because he did that, the street.com therefore cared more about him than the other people that got 5 or 10% only of them. So because he was half and half, he ended up selling that for millions of dollars, I think in less than a year, to them. He also mentions always be deal making. He covers that in great more detail than just what I mentioned. He then talks about a cheat sheet for starting a business. He has many questions answered. I mean, he had, I don't know if it's 60 or 70 different questions. He does a Thursday chat on Twitter. So he has done this for years and years and years. So he's heard so many questions. He lists a lot of them there. And some of them are quite funny when he responds to, nope, don't do that. Go see question two. He talks about things from when to go for venture capital. Should you patent something? How much equity to give away? Should you worry about SEO and social media marketing? Let me tell you, he says, no. As in so many people, get a customer. Get the first customer, sell something. I think he says for patent, no, don't do that either. I can tell you now, I wish I would have spent the last couple of years instead of waiting on patents. Getting the first little cheap patent for $120 for 1 year and trying to license the idea. I bet I could have paid somebody thousands of dollars to try to license it instead of me trying to patent it. Getting a patent that doesn't do anything doesn't make me feel any good personally. Can I say I'm an inventor of something that never came to fruition? Yes. Doesn't do anything for me. Next in the book, Why I Want My Kids to Know the Mysterious S.J. Scott. Who is that? And this has gotten my attention here. This is a guy who writes a book about every 3 weeks. He writes 2,000 words a day. And James noticed him because James would have a book come out and this other guy would have a book. And it's right there competing with his. He's like, who is this guy? So he looked him up and interviewed him on the podcast. He literally just writes every single day. He might have a list, a book of how to get out of your mortgage or how to do this or how to save for college. Just all these things. And you can sell them for, I don't know what he sells this for, honestly, but I started a book of questions myself that I want to create a little book out of. People are doing this on Amazon because ebooks, you basically have a Word document or PDF, you can upload it. Bam, you've got a book, you're an author. Some people want to say they're an author just so they can speak more and such. I personally want to put out anything that I think will help somebody. And I guess 5 or 10 years ago, I would have never thought, probably 2 years ago, that I would dare try to write a book. But at this point, I'm going to do the research to find out what category and how to actually sell some of the books. But I more so think, wow, do I have anything that could get out there? This guy simply does the research or hires somebody to do the research and creates little books and publishes them. I think he was making $40,000 a month was the past month after he interviewed him, or the month before or something, $40,000 a month. You might be able to write a book also, just so you know. Compound interest and compound abundance. He talks about that and it being a scam, or the scam. He then covers value your business, the choose yourself way, the secret of abundance. He comes back and says ideas are more valuable than money. He likes ideas. He says they're the new currency of the 21st century. But how do you value a company? He covers that. The 0-1 approach. There's a book called 0-1. Peter Thiel, T-H-I-E-L, wrote that. And Peter covers the four attributes for good business. Monopoly, scalability, network effect, and brand. So they discuss all those. Fascinating once again. At some point here, he talks about demographics and how he uses that to invest, the headwinds, where that's going. He talks about three models, the three D's model. If you're going to buy a business or something else, death, divorce, and debt. Any company that's in debt, or the owners are going through a divorce, or there's a death, you get a great deal on those things. Then the three P's model, how to value a company once again, people, process, and product. Who are the people working there? Can you improve that? The process, can you improve their process? The product. At some point in the book, he talks about a friend who bought like 30 Pizza Hut franchises or something and realized they were underperforming. He just had to teach them how to make the round pizza and truly deliver it on time. And he made bukus of money because he could do that. He could go in there and fix the processes and fix the people or help the people. Part three is keep and grow the money you make. He has 28 myths he talks about and he covers here. Things like 401ks and IRAs. How to avoid being trapped into things because your assumptions about what you've been taught about them or told are not really correct. Here's a one thing I had to note here was he talked about a CEO of a company who owned a whole bunch of stock in his company, publicly traded company. And James goes, "Hey, yeah, your stock price, you keep telling me it's going down or what have you." He goes, "Call your broker and ask him if they're short, if they're letting people borrow your shares of stock that you own in your own company and shorting your company." The guy goes, "Oh, no, they'd never do that. This is one of the top three banks in the world or something." He calls him. Gets a runaround. "Oh, well, I have to check on that. Let me see." The next day, his stock price went up 15%. 15. So literally, I called Fidelity and said, "Hey, the stocks that I own, do you guys like loan those out for people to short sell them?" They said, "Since I don't have a brokerage account, no." So that's something that literally, do you know any CEOs of companies? Do they have their own stock working against them and them getting no benefit? At the very least, if somebody's borrowing your stock through your broker, you should be getting some kind of payment for that, right? That was just mind-boggling. I did ask somebody in the family if that could happen with some stock, and they said, "Oh, no, never, never." I still need to check that just to see. Quite interesting. If you can help somebody learn something new once again, they'll look at you and go, "Thank you very much for that." I mean, imagine that CEO probably is like, "Wow, I owe James so much for like telling me this little thing that he knew," because James had been a hedge fund manager. He just knows some of these different things. Next little topic here was stop paying your debts. He says never invest big chunks of your money. And this has me thinking a lot. He's all about having cash on hand and making a payment. And for me, let's say I was going to buy a new car or a tractor or something, or anything I get a low finance rate on. If you can get 0% and the price really doesn't change if you finance it or not, you finance it. You keep your money. I've always been all about paying things off and not trying to have much debt. But in some cases, it really does make sense to don't take most of your money and chunk it away. I didn't note it here, but I then have to remind myself that he even has me thinking differently about owning homes, because so many people, most of their net worth, most of their savings are in a house that is not truly an asset. And he points out over and over again how renting can free you up in so many different ways. You don't have to commit to being there for a year or past a year. You have to take a job somewhere else. You don't have to sell your home. You don't own it. The market goes up and down. You don't care. You're renting. You don't have to fix the roof, nothing else. He says, don't put more than 10% overall in stocks or more than 2% in the same sector. Well, I personally break those rules, but because of him, I've thought like, yeah, how can I kind of spread these things out? but he doesn't even like to have more than 10% of his money in stocks. I literally asked him one of those Twitter Q&As something, and he's like, oh yeah, I like cash. And if deflation comes, I like that because I have cash. I can buy more things then. He says debt usually has a contract, such as the bank has an agreement with you. If you can't pay your mortgage, you signed a contract of exactly what can happen. So they're just going to follow that foreclosure process. Literally, you can also say no to those things and say and challenge them. But he says, don't beat yourself up. If you can't afford to pay your mortgage and your house is 100 grand below value, don't pay your mortgage. It's all agreed upon what happens. They expect that to happen. He talks about credit card debt. And his insights from being a hedge fund manager are fascinating. He goes, so you don't pay your credit card. And then they sell that for pennies on the dollar to somebody. Like you owe them 100 bucks, they sell it for a dollar. So that's one penny out of every dollar they sell it for. And then somebody like a hedge fund or whoever bought the debt calls you and collects 2 pennies on every dollar. So out of $100, they collect $2. They doubled their money. So he once again points out about if you're really hurting, paying your credit card debt is not the best thing for you to be doing. Your credit's going to be ruined anyway. He would admit some point that his credit score is probably lower than most everybody that listens to him because he's been foreclosed on twice, but he has cash now. He doesn't care. Next topic, the 10 most important rules you need to know about investing. Who makes money in the market? And I can definitely remember these. He points out that people that hold stocks forever, like you start your own company, you started Microsoft, you own a lot of stock, you've held it forever. You're worth billions in that case, if you're Bill Gates. The next class of people that make money with stocks in the market, people who hold stocks for a millionth of a second, those would be the companies that have the algorithms that can do the trading so quickly. They get to see the trades before they actually execute so they can make little slices of pennies. That's not you or me. It's not. And then he points out with his insights, the people who cheat. He said in the hedge fund business, he knew so many people that did illegal things. So hey, just realize the market's not all that is what he's pointing out here. And once again, he only puts a max of 10% into the stock market. I heard him say at one point, he likes to have a lot of cash out because if there's a big correction of 30% or more, then he can buy in, let it go up and sell. So that's a good little tip too. If you have some powder dry, if you have some of your cash not in the market during these turbulent 2015 times, if it drops usually, hey, you can invest in, it goes up 5%, cash out some. He talks about in this whole next section, what he does with his own money. He has lessons learned from day trading. Basically, he was always stressed out and going a little crazy. He comes back to saying, invest in yourself. I second that. Invest in experiences rather than possessions, he says. And that literally has me thinking with the family. Yeah, you know, buying this or buying that, but yet taking the kids as they get older on some crazy different vacation in some other country to see some stuff we've never seen before. Possessions or experiences? He pushes the experiences. He talks about passive income. I second, third, fourth, fifth that one. I can do this podcast in the middle of the day because I started a business 12 years ago. Passive income is a key to freedom for me, a big key. So you got to research that. How can you do that? If you have some money, you can buy rental properties. That can be decently passive. Next, he covers books. Reading is the best return on investment, he says. You get to read about people's lives and experiences for almost nothing. Somebody has a biography, autobiography, their whole life, everything that made them successful or why they could write a book or why somebody would want to read their book, condensed in a book for 10 to 20 bucks or 99 cents on Amazon. Big deal. One reason I'm trying to read a book a week, minimum. Gratitude is just another word for abundance, he says. I like that. That's good. Investing in yourself will get you wealthy if you remember that financial wealth is a side effect of real inner wealth. This is the most powerful investment you can do with your time and your life. You make money back, but not moments of stress or anxiety. I'm anxious about reading the words. So investing in yourself, he hits it again. It's just a side effect of your inner wealth. What you know, what you can give to other people is dependent on what you know. How can you help? He goes on to the 10 most important rules you need to know about investing. I noted four of these here. Invest in someone smarter than you. Cash is king. Invest in dividends. Invest in dividends aristocrats. And he then goes on to never invest because of tax reasons. So he comes back and hits once again on 401ks, IRAs, and Roth IRAs. Don't just invest in those because it seems like there's some great tax benefit. Once again, people make money every step of the way. I would tell you, as nobody that is certified, I'm not a financial accountant, a financial planner. I have an accounting degree. I'm not certified. If you're going to invest in an IRA and you can do a Roth IRA, you're allowed to pull out what you put in there tax-free or penalty-free. So if you put $10,000 in your IRA and it's gone up to, say, $12,000, you can pull out $10,000 and no penalty. So as I think about investing in those, if I had to do that, the Roth IRA is where I'd go because I could pull out some of that without being penalized 10% plus paying the taxes on it. Next section is street smarts are vital, mental models worth learning. Anti-fragile, he covers a bit about something that's anti-fragile gets stronger and stronger as it gets hurt. So system that gets stronger as it gets hurt, and he points out that our economy is not like that. It is rather fragile, not anti-fragile. The 4-hour work week, that's Tim Ferriss, he talks about. 10,000 hours practice with intent, that's important. So I might practice something for 10,000 hours because you make me. But if I have more intent and I do something with intent to get something out of it, the better. Idea sexy touches on again. The 80-20 rule. How to improve your life 1% a day. And then he talks about the four agreements. And this is a book that literally my wife and I gave out the mini version of at our wedding. So the four agreements, let's cover these. If you can handle this, these four things, woo! Be impeccable with your word. Mean what you say and say what you mean is what I think about when I say impeccable with your word. Don't take anything personal is number two for the four agreements. How often do we take things personally? I mean, if we didn't take things personally, are there less arguments in our life? Less hard feelings? Oh, yeah. Number three, don't make assumptions. Man, I've been catching people right and left lately. They probably don't like hearing it from me. But I'm like, that's an assumption. I don't want to assume. I'd rather pay a lawyer and know than assume something incorrectly that costs me money later. I just, assumptions, we all make them. But if they're about something important, don't question it. All right, make sure you do question it. Don't just assume and go with that. The fourth is always do your best. Those four things, once again, the four agreements, be impeccable with your word, don't take anything personally, don't make assumptions, and always do your best. Those are good. Those are great. He has a section called Four Things I Can Do to Change Your Life in the Next 10 Minutes. He comes back about using $2 bills to tip. People will remember you if you do things that are different. Being normal is just normal. Why am I going to remember you if you're normal? If you use a $2 bill, if you do something special, do something, network me, connect me, give me ideas, you're different. He talks about wearing a doctor's coat. He said he owns white lab coats and he wears them to the airport and stuff. He says, just the way people look at you and treat you. I can relate this to something I just heard recently about. If you just dress up to get on the airplane and you ask about being upgraded to first class and you're in a suit, the one guy said 3 out of 4 times he's been upgraded for free. So what you wear sometimes matters. He's all about using waiter's pads, where literally he writes his ideas on these little waiter's pads you get for a dollar. I sent him an idea. I really think he should produce his own waiter's pads just for ideas and sell them to us. Be like, James Altucher's idea pad, or maybe something that has some ideas on it to get you busy, get you thinking. And watch stand-up comedy. He comes back and hits that again. We are just about to wrap this up. How to get an MBA from Eminem. You can Google this, and he covers it line by line in the book. The Eminem's rap battle versus Papa Doc. It's the movie 8 Mile, the lyrics of that. It is fascinating to look at how he breaks down. The things I took from this is, if I come to you in business and I offer you a product, and then I right there after I offer you this great product, remote desktop hosting in our case, let's say, and then I know your concerns, and I lay out there all the concerns, and I put them to bed, that they're not, nope, that's not a concern. We got that handled. No commitment, no big charges, no month to month. You're not going to fight me as much. You've got nothing left to say. In the rap battle, Eminem basically says everything the other guy would say about him. So then what's he going to do? I mean, he breaks it down into, you want to be selling to people and make sure they can relate to you. So Eminem relates to the audience when you're having a rap battle. It's fascinating. That's toward the very, very, very end of the book. A couple of things he talks on are avoiding regrets. And then he has a section on how to run a Choose Yourself meetup. I've been to one meetup group for the Choose Yourself here in Denver, although it's actually 30 minutes away probably. So literally, you might just go out there now and say, hey, I may or may not buy the book, but are there any meetups of other people looking to advance themselves like this, looking for more than just the corporate job or the cubicle job? So you could look for a Choose Yourself meetup. Choose Yourself, as in his books are called Choose Yourself, Guide to Wealth. There's several of these. So there's meetups out there also. I like it that he literally wants to encourage people to improve their lives. And that's one of the reasons he does a lot of this. That's one reason some of his books are 99 cents, because he wants to get the message out there. He wants you to improve 1%, 1% each day. Just focus on those things. Can you come up with ideas? The new currency ideas. Well, I hope you like this enough to go get the book and read it. It's a very easy read. He's a very good writer in that it's fun to read. I'm currently reading a book that Lewis Howes talked about for sports. And oh my goodness, it's been like 3 weeks and I'm halfway through it on my Kindle or my Kindle app on my iPhone. It is not a fast read, whereas so many other books, they are. I can read them in a week, no problem. But some of these, I'm like luckily combining 2 and 3 books at once. Look forward to other book reviews in the future. There are some very small ones I'm going to cover. And some of these books, it's just worth it once again. They took the time to put all these pages together. If you execute on a few of these ideas, once again, you have to take the action. Executing is taking the action on some of these. It can really help you. It can help you advance, help you reach some of your goals and dreams that you're really looking for. So once again, this was James Altucher, Altucher. Check the show notes. I've got all this stuff posted in here for just my notes of what I was going to talk about. This is the book, Choose Yourself Guide to Wealth. Check him out, buy his book, support him. Maybe go to a Choose Yourself meetup. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Kinch with Your Business Podcast, formerly known as Your Freedom Podcast. It's really the same thing. In my mind, if you can have your own business, you can also have your own freedom, more and more freedom. So hope you enjoyed it. Please leave us a review on iTunes.